Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
The Beast, the Man.
You gotta be the Man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
Hey, this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it?
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed.
And welcome everybody to a post-Valentine's Day edition of Online World of Wrestling Radio. Our number, as always, if you wish to chime in at any point during the program, is 267-297-1397. If you Skype, like we all do here, you can type in Sir Rockin' into your search contacts, add him, and then you'll be added to the mix. In a little while, we will have Kevin K. Scott, our regular contributor that covers TNA Wrestling, for the Under the Ring blog done by Phil Strom of the Poughkeepsie Journal. He'll be here to talk about all the fun and craziness that ensued at Against All Odds, and we'll tease a couple returns that happened last night and tonight at the TV tapes in Orlando. We will have Spug here tonight. He is gracious to join us here. Mace will also be joining us here for at least our WWE portion. He had enough of TNA Wrestling Sunday night on Wrestle Talk Radio to last him a lifetime, so we'll give him a spare night that he can go and do whatever he wants to during this afternoon in Australia. We will be joined right now by a gentleman who helped out Kayfabe Commentaries, our friend Sean Oliver and his excellent company. If you've gotten any of the timeline history of the WWE DVD series that have had Don Morocco, Rikishi, Honky Tonk Man, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and most recently Lisa Moretti, who you know is Ivory, you'll see on the DVD this website called thehistoryofwwe.com. And if you did like I did, you clicked on it and all of a sudden you went, oh my God! It is a treasure trove of information that you cannot believe. And we welcome to the show for the first time, Graham Coffin, the gentleman who runs that site. Thank you for joining us this evening, sir. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. Doing great.
Before we get into all the fun that happened last night at Monday Night Raw and previewing the Chamber itself this Sunday, give the fans a quick overhaul. What inspired you to suddenly go, you know what, I really like wrestling. I think I'm going to make a website and make one that is immaculately as detailed as Online World of Wrestling is.
Basically, what happened there is when I was a kid growing up, used to love the After magazines, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and my favorite section was the arena results because, I mean, you know, 20 years ago, you could not see that kind of stuff on television like we do now. And it just blew my mind that these, you know, huge matches were going on pretty much every day of the week. And, about actually nine years ago this month, is when the website first went live, and kind of what prompted that is, you know, I'm going around the internet, I'm going, you know, when I was a kid, I used to love, you know, looking at these old results. There's got to be a website out there that does that. And amazingly enough, there was not. So with a whole bunch of time and a whole bunch of motivation, that's kind of become what you're looking at right now.
Now, how did the relationship with Sean Oliver and Kayfabe Commentaries come about? Because I'll be honest, until I had received the initial Timeline DVD, I did not know of your website. And now that I do, it's amazing to go there. Take us through that and, that and everything else.
Sean's actually been in correspondence with me for several years, you know, before Kayfabe Commentaries kind of got its start. And once it did, we kind of touched base a few times, and he said, well, wouldn't it be kind of cool to you know, tag team something? And, you know, I can, you know, use what you've put together and while at the same time promoting the website. And it kind of developed into the Timeline series, which I love. You know, I caught the Lisa Moretti one actually just this weekend. And the way it details month by month, what's going on in the company at this time. It's using a combination of ring results straight from the website, along with just various other historical facts and kind of asking that, person, whoever it is for that release, their thoughts about what's going on at the time. I think it's really entertaining and a lot of these folks are really personable. And you get a great show, and you also learn quite a bit at the same time.
Yeah, and some of the facts that show up in there, I'm just going like, I had no idea about that. I mean, are you doing the research with Sean on it, or is there a staff that you have of minions? How does this work?
From watching what they've put together, It's a combination of, I think all the ring results is from the website. So when they're going, you know, Royal Rumble 2001, this guy beat that guy, here was the attendance, here was the match time, here was the finish. That a lot of that stuff is coming from the website. Now, there's plenty of other things that are not, you know, whether it be so-and-so was arrested or, you know, whatever, that may or may not come from me, but I think the website acts as a big resource for them to kind of help go through the year and put viewers in perspective of what's going on at that time. I'm not really actively researching for them. They're just kind of using what's on the website to help them out.
Okay, because some of the stuff, especially during the Hacks with Jim Duggan one, was just priceless to go, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
during
I enjoyed that
year,
one.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And the Ivory one, if fans haven't gotten it yet, my review will be posted on All Our World of Wrestling in the next couple of days. She does not hold back on anything. And the worst part is, I think Sean Oliver needed some hockey equipment or football equipment because she beats the snot out of him during his 2-hour interview. Is there someone, is Sean coming to you and by chance and saying, so I got an empty year, like he told us 1985 is going to be Greg Hammer Valentine, and 1997 is Jim Cornette, who was a part of creative at that time. Has he come to you and said, who would you, if you were running this thing, Graham, so who would you like for 1990-whatever or 1980-whatever?
No, we haven't discussed that. I think he's just kind of working with the talent that he sees might be available and kind of tweaking that to years that would be best for them. The discussions we've had have been primarily, you know, what are some avenues that we can use on the DVD to kind of, you know, further both of our efforts. And if you look at the DVD, if you look at the case even, you'll see, like, some newspaper clippings, some advertisement, posters, and that kind of thing from that year. And a lot of that information is also comes from the website. So it's helping, them graphically to try to sell their product as well. We've kind of discussed some other avenues. I think in previous, not the Timeline series, but in some other releases, I think the, what was it, the Tito Santana, Greg Valentine, and then the...
Side of the Story.
Yeah, My Side of the Story. They've done some booklets in the past that kind of had the match results. I don't think that's something that they want to keep continuing to do, but that's another resource where, you know, that additional information for the viewer, whoever buys that DVD, is pretty cool.
Your site came in very handy today when I went to do some background on the actual Elimination Chamber match, which will be featured two times this Sunday. And it's amazing that since 2002, since this event has been created, and we'll get into that next week, we're going to have David Lagana, former creative member of WWE and current creative with Ring of Honor on. Just in your research for the site, take us through this. You look at Hell in the Cell and you go, wow, okay, you're going on to the roof at some point here. It's an obvious, but there's no way out of this chamber thing, man. Oh, 13. This Sunday is the 12th and 13th match in the actual history of the chamber. But in your eyes, is this the ultimate end-all, be-all? Because it's kind of War Games-like. It's kind of WCW Thunderdome-like. It's kind of TNA kind of stole it for their escape thing. But, I mean, is this the ultimate? Can WWE do anything crazier than this?
They probably can, but I don't know if they've thought it out yet. I think this is the one stipulation match in the company right now where you're guaranteed to really hurt the next day. I don't think you can go through the match and not come out of there beaten and broken. You take a backdrop on the steel outside the ring, that's going to hurt. And not only that, but the positioning of the pay-per-view, to have it be in February just before WrestleMania, really mixes the deck in terms of what you're going to get at WrestleMania. We've had quite a few upsets in recent years when it comes to Elimination Chamber. They kind of, you know, we thought this was going to be the matchup for WrestleMania, and then they throw in a twist, different guy leaves with the belt, and we got a different guard for the big show.
Well, to you, and then we'll pass this around to Spug and Mace. If you were WWE creative and you're Vince McMahon, this event has been at this point on the schedule since No Way Out 2008, and then has moved on subsequently to be the February pay-per-view. Would you move this further away from Mania, or is this good idea to get to Mania? Because from this point coming Sunday, you have, I think on the calendar, is a good 6 weeks to recover and then build to Mania. Is this the good spot to have the chamber, or should it be almost around like when Money in the Bank is, lose it somewhere in the summer before you get to SummerSlam?
You want to open with me for that one?
Yes, sir.
Okay. For right now, I think it fits because for the pay-per-view before WrestleMania, it's very easy to say, nah, I'm going to hold off. I don't need to order this one. I'll just order WrestleMania. I think it works out in their favor to have the best stipulation branded pay-per-view be right before WrestleMania. It's only to increase the buy rate and increase the talk between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Between, you know, if you take that out of the equation, it's a nothing pay-per-view, and it's easy to skip over.
To either one of you gentlemen, if you had creative control, would you leave this where it is, Spug?
I don't.
Or do you move this?
I don't see what is wrong with it being where it is, but... you get a lot of your feuds for WrestleMania that come out of this event. So if you move it, they're just going to replace it with something else. So it's actually in a really good spot. Unless you have WrestleMania early, which I think is the case in 2 years. It's going to be in the middle of March. WrestleMania
I think so,
is. Yeah. So, you know, instead of having 6 weeks to prepare for Mania and Heel, you've now got a little under four.
I keep it where it is at the moment. It's probably builds up your first 3 months as a great excitement builder. Plus, you know, people will talk about the Elimination Chamber all the way through to Mania. And considering that they've gone from doing it late in March to early April in the last few years, you know, they need something to keep the excitement of the people up.
Yeah, Mania has bounced around for fans that aren't aware of it. I mean, I remember WrestleMania 20 being early, I think it was like March 14th, so it's like, wow. This structure started its debut at Survivor Series 2002 for fans that aren't aware of it. It was how Shawn Michaels got his reputation as the political person really was solidified if you talk to certain people in this match, because it ended up being Triple H dropping to Shawn Michaels and then dropping it right back and dropping it. The only time the title has not been on the line was the 2008 Royal Rumble. Triple H won the Raw match to go to WrestleMania and Taker won the SmackDown match to advance. The ECW Championship was on the line at the December to Dismember pay-per-view, where Bobby Lashley retained his championship. And this event is most famous for, I believe it was New Year's Revolution 2006, where John Cena won the cage, however, lost to Edge immediately, cashing in the Money in the Bank. And, of course, last year we saw Shawn Michaels pop up out of the cage floor, or chamber floor, so to speak. Could this be a prelude when you look at this card? There's only three matches announced right now. You'll probably have a ladies match. And the SmackDown one, for fans that aren't aware of it, and we'll break down SmackDown in a few minutes, depending on what goes on this Friday, Mace, you know, the belts on Edge, it's on Dolph Ziggler. So you've got Edge, Ziggler, Drew McIntyre, Kane, Ray Ray, and Wade Barrett in this. Are you okay with this storyline that they're doing where, you know, don't do the spear, Edge? No, Vicky, I'm going to do the spear. No, don't do the spear. Oh, you did the spear. And Clay Matthews of the Packers runs down, counts the pin, and on Monday, you know, now we may end up having the belt held up. Is this good storyline, or is this you guys don't know who you want Alberto Del Rio to face in WrestleMania and you're just throwing darts at the board for the moment? I've totally lost them.
Yeah, you kind of confused everybody, Holmes.
I want to
take it back to our guest who is here for an interview.
Well, he's here to contribute as well.
I've looked at your site, and it is an amazing plethora of information. I mean, absolutely amazing. And I'm going to assume that at some point you had to contact WWE for some of this information. Was there any sort of holdup from them?
No, I've never contacted them.
Would you consider contacting them for more information or for more things for your site?
Well, I take that back. I guess in a roundabout way, they've contacted me. I know some folks that work in their video research department, and they've sent me some stuff that they've gone through. I don't know if I necessarily contact the corporation, because for a lot of this stuff, I'm not certain they would even know or keep records. You know, a lot of the television stuff is pretty easy to track down, but when you get into the 1960s, 1970s, where they're running high school shows, they're not going to have any idea. You really got to look for the people, the fans that went to those shows, or whatever publications were around back then that would have run those results, which would have been far fewer than there are now. And honestly, the fans that have gone to these shows over the years have been a huge resource for making it as complete and accurate as it is.
Now, when you were putting this website together and you were going through all this information and the entire history of this great wrestling promotion, because, I mean, at one point it was an NWA territory, and then it wasn't, and then it was again, mm-hmm. and, of course, we know what happened with Vince Jr., What was your favorite part putting all this together, putting all this information out there?
I think one of the things that keeps me going, because it's pretty overwhelming if you think about trying to do this. You can easily get bogged down in that, well, this is never going to be complete, and it's probably not. But one thing that keeps me going is finding the really obscure stuff that no one has really come across. For instance, and I talk about this one a lot because I think it's really one of the big matches that drew me in as a fan when I was a kid. But SummerSlam 92 with the Hitman and the British Bulldog, about 2 months before at a TV taping, they had a dry run of that match, and Brett won. That, I think that's really interesting and something that a lot of folks don't realize. Another thing, Hogan Andre, everyone knows WrestleMania 3. I cannot tell you how many times those guys fought in 1980 or 81 all over the country. I mean, that was a done deal. You know, before 1982, they had wrestled in every major market in North America. And then a couple of years later, they do it again, and that's the match that everyone remembers. But just the stuff like that really, it's really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it was refreshing to be someone who grew up in New York and was able to watch WWF programming on MSG Network when they did their Garden House shows, and I just happened to go there, and I'm like, there's no way he's got all this stuff. And I click, and I'm going, son of a bitch, I was at that house show, and he's got every single freaking match that was on there. I mean, is it tape traders that are also helping you out and RF video type stuff? Because
there's a lot of actually international tape traders will come across stuff like matches that were never broadcast in America, but were taped here or something back, you know, 20 years ago at a TV taping, or just like weird stuff like, you know, random shows that were televised. That were actually taped and televised only in Europe, maybe France or something like that, and has never seen the light of day in America. And that's really cool, too, because you get to see a lot of these big matches that actually were televised, maybe big feuds at the time that never really got, you know, much television time in the U.S.
Yeah, because we had Brian Shields on, who is a part of the WWE Encyclopedia book, and he does a monthly interactive video segment that's from New York City Libraries. And he said when he did the book, he just sat there going, oh, my God, there's so much stuff here. How the heck am I going to get through all this with all these wrestlers? Well, there's certain points that you're doing this and you suddenly looked at a sheet and said, you got to be kidding me. So-and-so wrestled for the WWF? I mean,
how
did he get there?
I'm sorry?
I mean, how did that person get there? You'd look and go, who the heck is that guy? And when did he work for the WWE? It's like all of a sudden you're doing your notes and, hey, Tony Schiavone did commentary, Rod Chungar did. I mean, who didn't work for this company?
Well, what's really interesting is going back, you know, 15, 20, 25 years ago and taking a look at the TV tapings, not only the matches that aired, they just like the syndicated stuff, but the dark matches, the tryout matches for guys like Sabu and Taz and, you know, guys that weren't even picked up at the time, but later became somebody. That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, you see Owen Hart's name pop up, the Hardys pop up, that you're just like, holy cow.
Right.
Now, when you were going through building your database and putting all this information together for fans who may not know or may not know the full story, and I'm vaguely informed on this. The WWWF originally was part of the NWA. Mm-hmm. And I believe in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, they broke away and then were reacquired. Was there ever any information put out on why they were reacquired?
Are you talking about when Pedro had the belt?
I believe so.
Okay. In 63, do I need to recast and recap why they broke away initially?
Well, please some do. Of that I think that I know, but go ahead and give it, because it's a great book on the history of the NWA that goes into that, but it's your fault.
Just real quick, 63, Buddy Rogers has the belt. Vince Senior wants to keep him in the territory because he's drawing a lot of money as champion. Yada yada yada. They keep him as champion even though he's lost the NWA title to Luces in Toronto. Fast forward, Bruno has a belt, et cetera, et cetera. I don't really know the detail behind why there was that reconnection in the early 70s, but for whatever reason, and I think a lot of publications at the time actually took away the world title status of the WWF title, because I guess they just kind of thought of it as again, more of a territory. And then I think that went by the wayside when Backlund had the belt toward the later part of the decade. Why that reconnection there, I don't really know. But I think there were just, I know Pedro, Superstar, Backlund, et cetera, started going and working in NWA territories when they had the world title. So I thought that was pretty interesting. If you look at Florida during the 70s when Superstar Billy Graham has the world title, he's in Florida defending the WWF title, even though it's a completely different territory.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be part of the reconnection there. I don't know the full story. I'll be honest with you.
That was another DVD I forgot to mention, the 1977-78 DVD with Superstar Billy Graham, and it was amazing to see him going to Sam Mushnick's territory in St. Louis, and as you said, he was contracted, he was working for the Grand down here in Florida at that point. So you saw a lot of NWA versus WWF matches, and for fans who don't remember it or aren't aware of it, at the time point that we're talking about with Graham, when Vince McMahon Sr. owned the organization, it wasn't even the WWWF. It was, I believe, Capital Wrestling was the original name that they came up for it. And it's just to look at some of the body that this company had, and you know, just all of a sudden you go, hey, look, Ivan Koloff, champ, cool, Stan Stasiak, champ. I mean, when you get into this era, the modern era, and you look, does it blow your mind to go, look at all these WWE championship title changes, yet Bruno Sammartino had the belt for almost 8 years? I mean, is that, does that kind of stuff just sink into your head and go, okay, either McMahon Sr. really had a lot of respect for Bruno, or he just was that big a draw?
He was definitely the latter. He was a huge draw, and it was a different time period where you could get away with doing that. I think now we are so, as a culture, we are so, we want something right now. And I don't think that you could have a champion in any field, in any sport, have a run like Bruno and stay as successful.
Or someone like Hogan, who was there for 4 years, I think, during the early 80s. The 80 run was 80 to 80
right.
something, like 89.
But even Hogan, when he had the belt, he only held it half as long as Bruno. So, and as big as Hogan was. So even half a run of Bruno, and already you're thinking, you know, Vince is thinking, okay, we got to make some changes. We got to bring in Savage. We got to bring in Warrior. We got to do the stuff to keep the money up. You didn't have that back then. The fans were so rabid for Bruno and Pedro and a lot of the other guys that would fill out Madison Square Garden every month. Now they don't even go to the same arena. I mean, they'll go maybe twice a year instead of every month, or in the case of many arenas, twice a month. So it's a completely different everything.
Yeah, I just want to hit on something with Mace before we go to break. I brought the question up, and unfortunately he dropped his headset and he felt bad about it. Going into this Sunday's event with this chamber thing, we'll preview SmackDown side real fast, and then we'll talk about all the fun that happened on Monday Night Raw, and Graham will stay with us through the break for that. In this chamber, that would be my wife and my mother watching some show called Raising Hope, if you're hearing yelling in the background. The chamber match this Sunday, the belt may be on the line, may not be on the line, depending on what Vicky Guerrero gets away with. That said, it's Edge, Dolph Ziggler, Drew McIntyre, Kane, Rey Mysterio, and Wade Barrett. I believe everyone except for Barrett and McIntyre and Ziggler have been in this match before. Judging from what we're possibly going to see this Friday night, where I believe it's a 12-person tag for the 600th episode, who in your mind, Mace, walked out with this belt? And then we'll pass it also to Graham as well. But if you got the pencil, who walks out of here and faces Del Rio at Mania? Do you still keep it with Edge, or is someone else, do you want Rey versus Del Rio to have an all-Hispanic main event?
I definitely stick with Edge because that's how they've been hyping it for the last couple of months, and I don't think they're going to change it like all of a sudden like they, well, what they could do. But then again, who knows? It's SmackDown. Nobody really cares what goes on there anyway.
Yeah, because this isn't something new, Graham. I mean, you go back into the annals of WrestleMania, I believe it was WrestleMania, and you go to 12 and 13, 12 was the amazing match of Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, and if you watch the Bret Hart DVD, he will tell you that I was once I got the bell back, I was supposed to go, we were supposed to do something, or we were supposed to go to Mania 13, and then Shawn Michaels had knee problems. I mean, this isn't something new. A WWE creative could go, yes, we've got Mania planned out. Sort of. If you're watching this show on Fridays and you've seen a lot of the stuff that's crossed over to Raw, who keeps the belt to go to Del Rio? Do you agree with Mace that it's got to be Edge, or do you see someone else stepping up and going, I'm the champ for the moment?
I think it's a lot of wasted time and energy if they put it on someone else right now. Since the Royal Rumble, it's been Edge and Del Rio on screen together, and I think that only makes sense to continue it forward. I think the whole thing with Vicky and Dolph is just so not everyone is completely betting on Edge for, and I think this goes to the Spear too. They're trying to stack the deck as much as they can so that Edge overcomes the odds, makes it to WrestleMania, and then faces Del Rio.
And in case you forgot, his name is Alberto Del Rio.
But you already knew that.
Yeah, which is getting annoying after a while. I want him to walk out with a name tag on and just point to the name tag and go, I'm Alberto Del Rio. Thank you very much for coming. Do we have Spug? Do we lose Spug? Think we lost him for the moment. Okay.
Speaking of Del Rio.
Uh-oh. There he is.
Speaking of Del Rio, did you see who his dad and his father are? Or his dad and his uncle are? Did you see who they are?
Yeah.
You mean in the storyline or in real life?
In real life.
Well, enlighten our listeners so they know what we're talking about here.
Dos Caras, Two Faces in Mexican, and the legendary Mil Marascas.
Yeah.
Are his dad. His dad and uncle. Dos Caras is his father and Mil Marascas is his dad. And Alberto Del Rio actually wrestled under the name Dos Caras for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And he fought MMA. He was an MMA fighter for a while, and he in Pride, and they actually got Pride to change some of the rules so that he could fight with a mask on. And he actually fought Mirko Krokop at one point. It was like a 27-second knockout that Krokop scored. But, I mean, for all those people who think that this is just some reject that WWE pulled up from FCW to push, the dude's got some legitimate skill behind him.
Mm-hmm. He's definitely got some backing here. So what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and keep Graham on the call. When we come back, we will be joined by Kevin Scott, who was like, yeah, I'm going to talk TNA, but I got to talk about that thing that happened last night on Monday Night Raw. So if you're wondering, what the heck's with the weird music? Well, after somebody named Esperanza something beat Justin Bieber, which there were many signs I saw in the audience of, if Bieber loses, we riot. Sorry, Grammy people. We're outlining some of the best new artists, going all the way back to the actual creation of the best new artists. So you heard Arrested Development Tennessee, and you heard Overkill by Men at Work, And we'll take a break with the band that should never, how they ever won a Grammy and had to surrender it, we'll never know. All in World of Wrestling Radio, we'll be back.
Wild Talkers, Tim Stein here to tell you about our current contest. We call it Show Us Your WTR. If you do, you can win.
Kick ass, dude!
All you have to do is take a photo of yourself, family, or friends holding a Wild Talk Radio sign.
Alrighty then.
Then send it in to us.
You got mail.
You bastard!
Once we receive your photo, you are automatically entered to win a DVD of your choice.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
All entries will be eligible for our grand prize drawing at the end of the contest period. Grand prize to be announced at a later date. Great weekly programming here at Wild Talk Radio, totally free for the listening. Plus now, we are paying you for being loyal fans.
Holy crap, dude!
Be as creative as you want with your pictures. Just make sure you send them to admin@wildtalkradio.com as soon as possible.
No!
And ladies, if you want to write Wild Talk Radio across your chest and snap a pic, you win automatically.
Swing!
We're just nice people that way. Just make sure you are at least the age of majority so nobody gets in trouble. Just dirty looks.
MV.
Yeah. If you ladies do choose this option, include your DVD choice when you send the photo. And you don't have to show your face if you feel brave enough to send this picture.
Does this seem weird?
Hey, it pays to listen to Wild Talk Radio.
This concludes our broadcast day.
Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Pilgrim, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Woogerman.
And some more.
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site for pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Alright, wrestling fans, this is Rick the Model Martel. Yes, of course, the one and only the model. You are listening right now to Wild Talk Radio Network. Yes, a network with some class, of course. And remember, fans, arrogance is not just a fragrance, it's a way of life.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Sorry, I just feel like talking with a very deep soul radio voice right now when Sade of Smooth Operator comes on. That's from 1986 when she won the Best New Artist. Spug and May still joining us here. Graham Colvin of the History of WWE.com, which is an amazing website. Definitely go and check that out, joining us as well. And as I said, he was going to be a part of the TNA segment, and then all the fun happened last night. And he said, oh, God, I must come on and talk about that guy who debuted. And it's like, wow, cool. So from Under the Ring, which is a blog affiliated with Poughkeepsie Journal, our friend and colleague and a very funny comedian, if you live on Long Island, you can find him somewhere at clubs. Kevin Scott joins us. Good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing really, really good. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're pretty good. Now, if for fans that aren't aware of it, if you were under snow... Monday Night Raw last night featured the reveal of the guest host or host or hostess, as it looked for a moment there when some legs came walking out of a car. Now, before we actually get into it, last night's Monday Night Raw, which had fans probably from the dog show going, what's this? Oh, CNBC. Thank you. Click. Monday Night Raw did a 3.14 cable rating. Which was the first hour 3.03, second hour 3.25, with a total viewership of 4.8 million. Actually, it was down from last week's 3.3 rating. And obviously that was because they didn't announce some guy named Dwayne Johnson coming back to the promotion, which was mind-blowing. We want to mention, of course, the passing of Jerry the King Lawler's mom. We feel really bad about that, and it was mentioned a couple times during the show, and very surprisingly by The Miz doing his whole serious thing. We'll go around the table here as well. I don't know what The Rock drew. Tell me what the people all of a sudden jump on Rock, Sir Rockin'. Oh, okay. Dwayne The Rock Johnson's 20-minute segment from 11 to 11:20 overrun drew 5.7 million viewers. So almost a million more people got on Twitter and Facebook and phone calls. Like a certain point when Dwayne Johnson dropped his belt to Mick Foley back in the WCW days. Now this is whoa, I didn't know this either. Sir Rockin, the god of internet radio, provides us with this stuff. By comparison, the second hour of the Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania 26 with the build-up to Shawn Michaels' retirement did 5.8 million viewers. We'll go to Graham first, and then I'll cue everybody else up here. From a historical standpoint, he's been gone. He said in his promo he's been gone from WWE TV completely, other than showing up for inducting his grandfather and father into the WWE Hall of Fame. Were you surprised at the reaction he got, being that he was gone for 7 years, that some of these kids are going, hey, look, it's the guy from the Game Plan movie?
I wasn't surprised because I was one of them. I think with that build-up, the fans would have been royally pissed if it wasn't Rock, this is less than a handful of people in the world that they could have brought out to get that reaction or better. And when I was, but right before he came out, I was talking with some folks and I said, okay, it's gotta be one or two people. It's gotta be Rock or I don't know if they would risk it because the age difference. He's been off TV even longer, but Macho Man. I mean, Hogan, no. Flair, no. I mean, they're under contract, but even if they weren't, for them to come out, it would not have gotten that reaction. That reaction was historic. He still got it. Didn't miss a beat. Promo was perfect. So engaging, so entertaining. You can't touch him.
Now, to Kevin, I know from talking with you, you're a big fan of his promo work and everything, but were you surprised when you go, like I said, it's 20 minutes long. You can find it on tons of websites, YouTube. I think WWE.com even has it up. We're used to you can look and certain if you watch it over and over. He actually has goosebumps when he hits the ring there. What was your initial reaction, first of all, Kevin, when he got out there? And were you surprised at some of the shots he took at people like The Miz and John Cena and Bieber and some computer all of a sudden bonging in the background?
Okay. First, I have to admit, I have watched it several times the past couple hours. I am a huge fan. I've been a huge fan of probably from the beginning. When he came out, that was one of those moments that you just don't feel anymore when you watch wrestling. There's a handful of times, maybe in the past decade, obviously Hogan Rock. I honestly can't think of another thing to compare to it. Maybe Bischoff showing up in Raw. There are moments where you just sit there like, I can't believe this is going on. And even though, obviously, you heard the speculation beforehand, and if you are computer savvy, you can go to any website, and you might have even seen a spoiler or two, I completely tried to avoid getting any confirmation. I wanted to experience this the way that I felt it should be, you know, just going in, not really knowing if he was actually going to show up or not. That was easily the happiest I've been as a fan in quite some time. As far as his promo, the man's gold. He's magic. When he gets on the mic, there's something that he can do that very few people have ever, if anybody else, I really can't think of somebody that can do it the way he does it, where it's the timing, it's the way that he'll just give a look and hold a pause, the way that his eyes move, the way that he just feeds up the crowd. He has in the palm of his hand. He can do that. Very few people can come close to it.
That he is true money on the mic?
True. In terms of, I understand where you're coming from in that, in terms of, yes, the catchphrases, yes, they're repetitive. Some of it might be corny to some people, you know, not coming up with him in their attitude era. The fact that he can get on the mic and command that entire audience like nobody else, that's why I'll say he's money. I can't think of anyone who can do what he did last night for 20 minutes, no less. I got to give him credit for that. As far as the shot taking, The Miz wasn't as bad as I thought it could be, but Cena, wow.
You can't see me.
That was probably the most just surreal moment I've watched in quite some time, in terms of where you took the company's top money man and instantly turned to a heel. That was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, too smug. I asked this to a few friends of mine over the day, and I'll put it up on Twitter and Facebook. Him showing up last night, the Sunday before the Chamber, and the Monday before whomever 2/21/11 will be, does that just totally blow away anything that could happen this Sunday or 2/21/11? Or should this have been done the week after 2/21/11, or is this the perfect time to do this? And take us through your feelings when Dwayne The Rock Johnson walked out.
Oh, I actually have an interesting theory about the 2/21/11 now.
Uh-oh. It's been diesel, isn't it?
Well, reading various reports, we had speculated for a while that it could have been Sting, right? I mean, that was the big deal. We were all talking that 2/21/11 could have been Sting. And to read, you know, everything about, oh, it's not Sting, you know, there's been no communication. Well, WWE's fantastic at swerving us at times. But I think that originally the 2/21/11 was going to be Sting, and the internet got a hold of it and blew it up, and now the way that WWE diffused that was, this is your big one. This is what we're going to give you. We're going to give you The Rock. So I think I think you might see The Rock go into the Hall of Fame this year. But when
really?
He walked, oh yeah, I think so. I really do think so. I really do. But when he walked out last night, and I had to work, so I got to watch it. I got to watch at least The Rock segment on DVR when I got home. But when he walked out, and the way that they set it up with the, you know, the lights and everything, and it was absolutely fantastic. They sold it perfectly. The buildup was great. The best part about that was, is I got the feeling like I was 12 years old again, sitting on my couch, you know, on Monday night, watching him go back and forth with Chris Jericho over Stephanie McMahon. You know, I mean, his ability, and it's such, there are very few individuals in wrestling, let alone on the planet, who have the ability to captivate the audience with their words. Martin Luther King, you know, Gandhi, and for whatever, you know, whatever motivations you feel he had or your personal feelings set aside, the way Hitler spoke to the masses in Germany post-Depression, you know, there are very few people, and I'm not saying The Rock is any like those historical figures, but the way that he has to get on a mic and speak and captivate an audience with his words and body language is absolutely phenomenal.
Now, that just blows my mind that Gandhi, Hitler, and MLK all got involved with Dwayne Johnson.
I
don't understand what you're saying.
Have you ever gone back and listened to any of Gandhi's speeches?
Yes, he once said, when he was asked about Western civilization, he said, I think it'd be a great idea. Mace, you unfortunately, I believe, if you are friends with Mace on Facebook, and we're not going to use, he's in witness protection in Australia, so we can't give away his real alias. He wrote a very interesting blog about this that I believe might be posted soon on wildtalkradio.com. I think he may be in the minority in the wrestling fan base when The Rock hit the ring and did his thing. So the floor is yours, Mace.
Oh, I'm getting ready. The shields are up and ready, and I tell you what, I'm expecting a lot of backlash.
Yeah, theater fans have nothing on wrestling fans, I'm sure, about when it comes to Dwayne The Rock Johnson, brother.
I do share the sentiments of everybody else that has spoken so far on this topic. You know, I don't underestimate what The Rock brings to the table in terms of what he can do for WrestleMania buy rates and everything. But I'm going to come straight out and say it. That wasn't The Rock. That was Dwayne Johnson playing a role. There was something off about the entire performance. It was like his heart wasn't in it anymore. You know, I remember looking back, and I said this on the post that is now up at wildtalkradio.com. You know, the guy always had this amazing passion and fire in everything he did as The Rock. Last night, it wasn't there. Now, a lot of people won't pick up on it. I'm quite sure that everybody is now swept up in the nostalgia of it. You know, just like, you know, as I pointed out, WrestleMania 18, where it was The Rock versus Hogan. Everybody got swept up in the majesty and everything of Hogan getting in the ring with The Rock. You know, it's, nostalgia is a great thing, but at the same time it causes nostalgia goggles. It makes us see the guy as he was when we loved him, not as he is today. You know, and I'm sure one of you are going to jump in at any second now and start putting me down about this.
I'm not going to put you down about it at all, because you're entitled to your opinion. Unlike Tim, who thinks that opinions are wrong, you're not wrong for your opinion. And I can see where you're coming from entirely on it. Absolutely. But I will say this. Watching him do his promo, I don't think the passion for it is gone. I don't think the passion for wrestling is gone and for the fans is gone. I think what he got disenchanted with was the way the industry was headed. And part of his promo last night against John Cena in The Miz was venting that frustration. You know, because he said it best. We went from, you know, the most electrifying era, we went from stomping a mud hole in people's asses to, you can't see me, we're playing peekaboo, you know?
Yeah. Thank God I didn't have my soda in my hand at that point, because it would have been all over my laptop and my television.
He's absolutely right. You know, I think he got a little disenchanted with everything, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with him moving on the way he did, and there's nothing wrong with him coming back. I will say this, though, however. If he comes back and it's a one-off, and he goes back to saying how he'll never step foot in a WWE ring again, and those days are behind him, and shitting on the wrestling fans, any goodwill that he regained last night from fans like myself, Kevin, Mace, you know, everybody who is in this phone call right now, he will lose all of that and then become the most vilified person in professional wrestling ever.
Yeah, which brings up an interesting thing, because he did proclaim that I'm back. Well, if you're like Mace and I and we're movie nuts, I immediately went to internetmoviedatabase.com and Mace went to a site of another one, and I'm going, well, let's see about that there, Captain Cupcake. Are you back or not? This May, he will be – the film is already in post-production, and if you watched the Super Bowl, you saw the commercial for Fast and the Furious 5, or I believe it's being called Fast 5. He is currently filming Journey to the Center of the Earth 2, The Mysterious Island, which I believe will be in 3D, and is also in production in Arabian Nights. Now, I'm not sure if that's an animated film or if that's a mainstream live-action film. So I'll gear this back to Mace, because it's faster open down there in Australia and didn't open so great. Is this The Rock's agent saying, dude, take some time from Hollywood, go soil your wrestling oats, brother, and come back? I mean, can he guest spot Mace? Can he do that, where he'll be in for a little bit? And maybe, I mean, Phil Strowe and I were talking about last night, and I think Kevin heard a bit of this too. Could this be with the teasing of Cena gearing to maybe get Dwayne in shape and get him to SummerSlam, maybe? I know I threw a lot at you there, Paul.
we'll take it step by step. First bit, faster, and it's opening in Australia. $800,000. That's tiny. I believe if I go to my little information, the total foreign is 1.9 mil.
Ooh.
Okay, so that's nothing. You know, so a grand total of about 23.4 million since this film has come out. Now, going back over his history, most of the films where he has been the main event, who's like the main character, they're not really pushing high numbers, unless you take a look at The Game Plan and The Scorpion King. Well, The Scorpion King, he was still in WWE. I believe The Game Plan was the last time we ever saw a real mention of him, which I think was his father's induction into the Hall of Fame.
Mm. Yeah,
but other than that, most of his films can't bust past, you know, I think the next highest is 60 mil, which was the Tooth Fairy. And that's only because we wanted to see The Rock in a tutu.
Yeah, and he's since then, since you mentioned Game Plan, he has been a part of, he was in Get Smart, Race to Witch Mountain was a film also involved in there. Caller, stay with us just for 1 second, we'll get to you. He did the voice in Planet 51, he was in Tooth Fairy, he has a cameo in Why Did I Get Married 2, and if you saw the recent Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell flick, The Other Guys, you saw him go out with Samuel Jackson in a humongous blaze of glory. So it could be one of those situations. We do have someone on the line who wanted to chime in. Welcome to the show, Mike. How you doing tonight?
What's going on, guys?
Take us through it, man. You're sitting there at home, and you're thinking, all right, it can't be Shawn Michaels because he's already in the hall. Legs, it's Stacey Keibler. Cool, she's back. Wait, Dwayne Johnson?
I wish it was Stacey Keibler.
Oh, I think we all wish it was Stacey Keibler. It really was kind of a twisted turn of events, because personally, when I saw the legs, I was like, God, let it be Stephanie McMahon. God, let it be Stephanie McMahon. God, let it be Stephanie McMahon. Then I see The Rock, so it's like, I mean, I, to be perfectly honest, I think that is WWE's way of saying, hey, The Rock is in front of you, but guess what? Justin Bieber signed a deal behind your backs without you guys knowing. Ha ha ha. So I to be honest, I'm glad that The Rock is back, but it's kind of, you saw it coming, to be honest. You actually saw it coming. Because, okay, Kevin Nash coming back to the WWE, Booker T coming back to the WWE, that should be telling you something. Like, people from the Attitude and the Alliance era, they're coming back because, you know, they're kind of sick and tired of this whole PG crap. And then, thank God for Spud when he did the best imitation of The Rock making fun of John Cena. It's kind of sad because The Rock is right. He's like, you know, you have this John Cena. You can see me. La, 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 la. Do the yellow and pink and purple looking like Fruity Pebbles.
It's the wussification of WWE to steal from the governor of Pennsylvania.
It is the wussification of the NFL. Don't even get me started on the NFL.
But, you know, I am happy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I am happy. But has The Rock officially finished selling his soul to Disney and Universal Pictures and Tyler Perry Films and fried chicken and collard greens and everything else and decided to go back to the WWE?
Don't get me started on the great drink. Hold on. Let me ask this
to Mike real quick. You know, he left. He's got a family. Unfortunately, he's divorced from his wife, but he's got a couple children.
You mentioned his wife. Don't they still have a business partnership together, though?
Yeah, they also own a couple of houses, including one down here in Florida. And for fans that don't even remember it, go to the biography that they did on A&E, and you'll realize that at one point during his wrestling career, she made more money than him. She is a very smart woman, his wife, Danny, who works as she was a exec at Merrill Lynch, and I believe she has her own hedge fund now. But back to Mike for a second. I mean, if you're Hollywood's throwing him millions, they're throwing him millions, and then we'll also involve Graham here in a second because, you know, there's a history here with Cena that we'll touch on with Graham in a second. But to Mike, I mean, do you blame him all those years ago leaving? Is there a certain sentiment like Mace that's going, yay, you're back? Why? Seven years, man? It's almost like Jeremy Piven and Gross Point Blank. 10 years, man! 10 years!
I can't blame him for the simple reason is that, yes, at the age of 30, he's done it all. But also, he did say at the Hall of Fame, if there were three people that he would fight, one would be Shawn Michaels, of course we know, cough, cough, retirement. Rey Mysterio Jr., he'll step on him accidentally. And then you have John Cena. Basically, that's kind of a way of saying, all right, you know what, I think I still got at least one or two left in me. So it's kind of like, yes, you've done everything, but have you really done everything that you said? Because he's like, I defeated Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania, blah, 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 blah. And now there's a lot of people talking trash, and that's John Cena. Yes, John Cena did talk trash. Once I listened to it this morning, I was like, yeah, I forgot about that.
Exactly. Thanks for calling in, Mike. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. No problem. Later.
All right. To Graham, like I said, there's proof of it. Cena during publicity, I think he did it for 12 rounds, which a couple years ago, he took some pot shots at Dwayne Johnson. Do you think that animosity is still there? I mean, do you honestly think, Graham, that when he walked in and creative said to him, or Vince said to him, you've got total control of what you say, keep it under a half hour, or did WWE say to him, hit this, hit this, hit this? I mean, does Dwayne Johnson still command that kind of power to go, I'm going to say what I want, and if you don't like it, too bad?
I would be shocked if he is holding a grudge against anyone. John Cena said, you know, oh, you know, if you really want to come back, he'd come back. I think it's kind of humorous to think that The Rock would hold a grudge against someone for all these years, with 2 or 3 years, because Cena said one little snide remark in a radio interview. I think enough fans know about that so that it makes for a just the program writes itself. Rock walks in, he said, oh, you trash on me, okay, and then you got a program. I think that's about it. I think Cena admires Rock. I think Rock thinks highly of Cena, but I think they can make each other better, and I think that's the goal.
Yeah, and I'm going to pass this around. Let me jump in real quick. Let me pass this around the rest of the group. I'll go to Graham, and then we'll go to Spug, and then we'll work our way to Mace and Kevin. Rumored on the table for Mania is still CM Punk versus Cena. Do you backburner that and say to Dwayne, you've got 6 weeks to get your butt in ring shape and let's blow the market up like crazy pay-per-view numbers to have Cena and The Rock, or do you table it, like I mentioned, and get him to maybe SummerSlam? If you got the book, Graham, what do you do?
I think I wouldn't do Cena Punk. I would do Cena Miz. And the parting shot of WrestleMania is Rock and Cena celebrating in the ring together, and then you put off the match for a few months. So, okay, they're over it, they're friends, and then you build to the match.
Go ahead, Spug, you wanted to say. I'm sorry I cut you off.
Yeah, I had a question, but that's okay. I forgot it now.
It happens a lot on this show.
If you book Cena Rock at WrestleMania. And
do you make that the absolute main event of the show, or does it fall in line like Hogan and Rock did at WrestleMania 18?
Hogan and Rock weren't the absolute main event of that show, and that quite by far was the biggest match of that pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. So you're chunking your money down. If you weren't chucking your money down for Mania with the idea of Del Rio, Miz, defending and everybody in the mix, you are now chunking it down. If Dwayne Johnson ponies up and says, "I'm in ring shape,"
I chunk my money down on WrestleMania regardless because it's right around my birthday. The thing though, if you book it properly, this is how you do it, or how I would do it. You have CM Punk win the Chamber. And you have Cena almost getting ready to win. The Rock pulls a Shawn Michaels, costs Cena the match. Because I think CM Punk Miz is a far better main event at Mania than Orton and Miz. Because we've seen that a billion times. So if I have it my way, it's CM Punk and Miz at Mania for the title. But you have The Rock cost Cena. The next night on Raw, The Rock says, you know what? Now we're all good. You know, you said what you had to say a couple of years ago. I did what I had to do. We're all good. You know, it's over. You have it escalate and escalate and escalate. Classic. You do it classically. You don't just, you know, oh, you cost me the title. We're going to fight at Mania. No, 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 no. You have The Rock come out and say what he has to say the Monday, the Raw after the Chamber. Then the following week on Raw, Cena may get in a couple of little digs or so before Mania. Bam! You have your match. You have Rock and Cena at Mania. You know, and it's Legend versus, you know, whatever, part two. And it's the passing of the torch again.
Kevin, you've got the pencil. Do you book The Rock versus Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch now, or do you save them for SummerSlam?
It's kind of a toss-up because obviously that's a WrestleMania match. At the same token, I don't think WrestleMania needs that this year, simply because obviously you have them as the guest host. You still have Taker Streak going to come to play at some point. Who knows, they can throw no surprise in there. HBK's same ceremony, everything. I like the idea of waiting for SummerSlam, only because I think, one, obviously I don't want him to, you know, go in and come out in terms of possibly a one-off match, be, you know, over before it's really got started. but also I think there's a lot more problems surrounding his return as opposed to just him and Cena. Because for me, and I think this is what some people have already touched on, his return makes everyone else look small in comparison. And you look at Miz, Dolph Ziggler is a legitimate heavyweight contender right now, possibly a champion on SmackDown. Can you take those guys seriously if The Rock's around? I think they might need time to really seriously build these guys up, whether it just be their in-ring work, promo, whatever they have to do, in order to make these guys look legit. Then you deal with something like Rock Cena.
I have a question for both Kevin and Graham, and, you know, Kevin can take it first as he wants. But, you know, you go back to the days when you had the Big Four. You had WrestleMania, the SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and the Rumble. If you save Cena Rock for SummerSlam, because this is obviously a WrestleMania match, do you not diminish everything else that is on the card for SummerSlam if you wait that long for it?
I could say I do agree with what you're saying with that. At the same token, I kind of think if you put it at WrestleMania, you're doing the same thing for your biggest card of the year. Because, like, honestly, there's no star power. That's the big problem. And obviously, you have The Rock, which he dwarfs everybody. I can't think of a single match that I would want to watch in the first place. But then if you have Rock Cena as the main event, that's all I'm caring about. But that's just me personally.
I think that if you draw it out, there's more opportunity for money to be made, not only at SummerSlam, but at the pay-per-views in between WrestleMania and SummerSlam. They don't have to have a match, but they can do something that's going to draw in viewers to order that pay-per-view. If you look, and not to do too much history lesson here, but if you look at the first WrestleMania, they did not put every big feud on that show because they wanted people to come to the next month's Madison Square Garden show and the month after that, where they would have those bigger matches. So rather than throw everything they had at the wall for that first show, you draw it out. And I do think that if you throw everything at the wall for this, for WrestleMania, what do you have for backlash? What do you have going forward?
Well, there is a distinct difference between WrestleMania 1 and the WrestleMania today. WrestleMania 1, all you had was dirt sheets that were in print. You didn't have the internet. You didn't have the days of instant communication, and you didn't have television ratings to worry about and pay-per-view buy rates to worry about. You know,
right,
you don't.
But if you already have a solid card, why rush a match that you could draw money for all year?
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. That's a valid, point.
Yeah, it kind of harkens, we'll get Mace's opinion on this in a second, but it kind of harkens back to, and I'm about to use creative and genius in the same breath of Eric Bischoff, but for a fan of WCW, you go back to what they did with Sting and Hulk Hogan, where they did, it was a Fall Brawl 96, and from Fall Brawl 96 to Starrcade 97, Sting and Hulk Hogan never, ever touched. It's almost, to go to Spug and Mace being their ECW fans, almost, I believe it was Taz and Sabu for the longest time had their thing, and Taz said it on the rise and fall of ECW, that they never touched for almost a year. So to Mace, is there money in making this wait? Could you carry in this era, as Spug mentioned, of the 24-hour news cycle that you see with the wars and everything else, and, you know, you've got a pay-per-view. You know, we're 3 weeks between pay-per-views right now, and then you've got six to get to Mania. Would you shoot the big money right now at Mania, Mace, or when do you pull the trigger on The Rock and Cena, or do you not even bother at all?
See, this one's a bit of a tough one to call. Like, of course, Vince McMahon, after last night, if he's not seeing money in Cena and Rock at Mania, then he's a stupid friggin' idiot. You know, that match is money at Mania. You could put it at SummerSlam. Hell, you could probably put it on the Great American Bash if they brought that back and finally give that some buy rates. You know, these two are money, no matter what happens. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't know if you really want to push for the Rock at Mania. As you said, we've got, what, 6 weeks or whatever it is for him to get in the ring shape. You know, that's a lot of cardio of a movie muscle that he's got to work with.
Yeah, because if you see the trailer for Fast Five, Furious Five, whatever it's called, he comes out with his big Jim Neidhart-looking goatee, and I'm going like, holy crap, he's huge.
Did you see him last night? Dude's cut.
Yeah, he's ripped.
Yeah, but Spug, that's movie muscle, dude.
Yeah,
he's just packed it on for his movie belt. I can tell you now, his cardio probably wouldn't be as good as it used to be.
It may not be as good as it used to be, but I will say this, and I will... When people say movie muscle, I cringe, because if you've ever seen the movie 300, those guys went through 3 months of physical training to get that look.
Yeah, computer helps too, but...
That wasn't computer-generated, though. That was legit.
I'm aware.
That was legit. And every time I hear people go, oh, it's just movie muscle, they're not really... Have you seen Brad Pitt, the way he prepares for a role?
Yeah, he gets divorced and then marries Angelina Jolie. Sir Rockin chimes in with his, the god of internet radio, wishes not to speak on the show. His ego is so powerful, he can't do it. It says here, it's not going to happen, but Cena and Rock confront one another at Mania for the first time. Then he says they do another confrontation at SummerSlam, and then you build it to WrestleMania in Miami next year, which our colleague Jim Barcelone, who's a contributor, announced. But he's saying you do it and you induct The Rock next year as the big name for Hall of Fame. So let me get this back on track for a second here. We already teased the SmackDown chamber where the belt is on the line. Being that he took it to The Miz last night, and it was good because with Jerry Lawler not there, what's there honestly going to be doing with that match? And Miz had another great match with Daniel Bryan on the show. We'll go to Graham and we'll work our way around. Could you see The Miz getting screwed by Dwayne Johnson to make the Jerry Lawler your world champion going into Mania, or am I just looking at bad tea leaves?
I think you're drinking heavily.
For a straight edge guy, then I am. Yeah, that's weird.
I think Lawler, late last year when he started working with Miz, people saw money in it, so they said, okay, let's do it on one of the secondary pay-per-views. But there's no chance that Lawler's going to win. I think The Rock simply mentioning Miz's name kind of implies that we're going to see some kind of altercation between those two at WrestleMania, maybe in a roundabout way with Miz losing the title. But I do not see Jerry Lawler as world champion.
Okay, Kevin, do you agree, disagree, or don't care?
I don't want to say don't care, but I don't care.
Okay.
I'll be honest.
How dare you, sir? This is Jerry Lawler we're talking about here.
I love respect of him, but the idea of watching Jerry Lawler at this point in time, finally getting the WrestleMania match, possibly in, even being champion, that's a stretch.
These two gentlemen, actually Spug did not give a prediction because he was ocupado this past Sunday, but do you see this as the holy crap moment of this pay-per-view, or is it how we forecasted in recent weeks that Cole interferes, Riley interferes, and this sets up either a handicap match with Cole and Riley against Lawler, or is it Lawler versus Cole at Mania straight up?
It's Cole versus Lawler at Mania straight up. We're not going to see, anything with Alex Riley. I mean, Alex Riley may interfere, but he's not wrestling Lawler. The eventual payoff is Lawler versus Cole, because everybody wants Cole to shut the hell up. I mean, that's what we all want, so.
Yeah, that was great to see The Rock shut him up, because that's old Jonathan Coachman stuff right there, and unfortunately Coach is just working for ESPN now, so.
And to be honest, Coach does a really good job with ESPN, I'm not even going to lie. But I the one thing I will say that will surprise me entirely is if Miz wins cleanly over Lawler on Sunday. Not if Miz wins, because, that's pretty much the tea leaves that everybody's reading, is that the Miz is going to win, and you're going to set up Cole and Lawler at Mania. But if Miz wins cleanly, if there's no interference, and we just get Lawler and Cole at Mania because Cole runs his mouth too much, and Lawler finally says, it's time to shut you the hell up, I will be amazed. I will absolutely be amazed and surprised, because Cole has made it abundantly clear on any Raw broadcast that he is on that that Jerry Lawler can't touch him because the Raw general manager said so.
Mm.
So
yeah, to the chamber itself, because the belt is not on the line here. So whomever of this six pack of Cena, Orton, Sheamus, Ron Killing, sorry, R-Truth, gotta be correct here, or Jerry McDivitt will sue us. CM Punk and John Morrison. Mace already gave his pick on Sunday. I believe he took Morrison. I have taken John Morrison as my pick that I want to see Miz Morrison, since I was robbed of it at a Royal Rumble. To Graham, we've talked about it on this show, and I'm sure your friends have talked about it after his amazing performance at the Royal Rumble. Does Morrison steal this show again at the chamber with this whole parkour training thing, or do you see one of these other five people being the safer bet going into Mania that'll draw the fans in to be with the Miz?
I think the safe bet is Cena. And I see him, beating Punk, essentially ending that. But yeah, I think they've got great things in store for Morrison. I'm a huge fan of his, and I think if he can stay healthy, he's going to have a great year.
Okay, to Kevin, give me a winner in the Raw Chamber. Do you like my idea, Morrison, or do you got another pick, or do you agree with Graham that it's Marky Mark's got to go to Mania to be Superman again and save us all from the Miz?
Because at last point, I do believe it will be Cena. However, Just going back to the Royal Rumble, Morrison's little Spider-Man move, that was probably one of the craziest things I've ever seen. He's been impressing me a lot in the past couple of months, and I would love to see him come out the winner. But I do expect to be Cena.
No, I was privy today to watch the Chamber match from 2002, Spug, and when I picked Morrison, because if you watch the opening 5-10 minutes of the actual Chamber match, it's Rob Van Dam against your man crush, minus the man beard or whatever you want, the tribute to Lemmy of Motorhead. And that is basically what RVD did for the opening 5 minutes, even once Jericho gets into the chamber. He is Spider-Man all over the place, jumping on the cage. He's doing roly-poly, flippy, floppy stuff over there. So is this the Miz's time to shine against Morrison and give the fans the numbers were there. The fans liked what they saw in that Falls Count Anywhere match they had on Monday Night Raw. So, is this Morrison's time to go, or are you agreeing that it's Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch versus the Miz?
It's not John Cena versus the Miz at Mania.
Ooh.
No. Because I said there was no way that the Miz was going to walk out of the Rumble with the title. I really didn't. I thought that they were going to strip it off of him and put it on Randy Orton to have a more legitimate name to headline WrestleMania. They obviously think that the Miz is very legitimate and can draw, and they very well could be right. I mean, if you have anybody that wins that chamber, it's going to be either CM Punk or it's going to be John Morrison, one of the two. Because they have proven, WWE has proven, that they will follow the trend. And, come on, the Miz girl has her own Facebook page. So
that's scary.
I want to see that little girl make that face again. That's kind of demonic. She reminded me of the chick from The Exorcist, but...
I didn't think of that. Good choice.
But, she, you know, if they do anything, they're gonna, you know, I think it'll be John Morrison or it'll be CM Punk.
Okay, Maze, do you pick it? Who do you, for, I believe you, did you, I believe you picked Morrison, didn't you? Or am I mixing you up with Omega?
I think you mixed me up with Omega.
Damn, cold pills.
No, as much as I'd love to see Morrison come out of the chamber with the belt and, you know, get the run at the big time that he deserves, I still reckon the office don't have the, you know, the thought behind them going, yeah, this guy's a legit superstar. I've still got the feeling that we're going to get Marky Mark. Unless suddenly he ends up in this program with The Rock.
And he saves the day once again at WrestleMania.
Like I said, he flies off from the chamber to rescue Lois Lane and saves the world from Lex Luthor.
Played by CM Punk, maybe?
Well, he has been bald before.
Which was a great moment of that year. Before we wrap this whole segment up, to Graham, Mania kind of falls into the formula of the Star Trek films, and I'm going to probably get smacked by the OTL guys here in that. Stay with me, because I got a theory. How if you follow the Star Trek series, the odd number Treks traditionally stink. Maybe the exception of a couple. But it seems certain manias in the odd numbers do tank. WrestleMania 13 comes to mind, where I said originally they were supposed to be Shawn Michaels dropping the belt back to Bret Hart, and instead we had Sid Justice, Sid Vicious, whatever he was called, and The Undertaker. And you did have a great match with Austin and Bret Hart. But is this somewhere close to right during your research that you look at some manias and you go, what the heck was that match even doing on there? I mean, is there some fear going into this because we're in Atlanta, Georgia Dome is a huge building, that this could fall like a turd with Bieber standing there going, yay, I'm here, Bieber.
Not really. I think, look at how many there have been. And if you look at the number of stinkers, it's far, far fewer. They have gotten in the trend now. We're several years into it of strictly doing stadium shows for WrestleMania. And yeah, there have been some freebie tickets given out, but they make such a big bank off the show. There's so much work that goes into it. I'm looking forward to going. I'm going myself. I'm not going into this thinking, wow, it's going to suck, Justin Bieber, yay. It's not just the show. I mean, they're selling the whole week. They're selling Access. They're selling Raw. They're selling the Hall of Fame. So it's more of a week-long thing. I think it can't help but be good. If it bombs, I'll be shocked. They've gotten that good at it.
Right, well, we're going to take a break here. The site is thehistoryofwwe.com. Don't type it any other way. You may end up at a site that you'll go, children, go out of the room. We thank you for being a part of this show, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Well, thanks very much for having me. I greatly enjoyed it, and I'd love to be back.
All righty. Coming up after the break, we will get all into the fun and nauseating stuff that was Against All Odds.
Is Kevin sticking around? Is he going to stick around for TNA? Because I want to grill him. I got questions for him, buddy.
Absolutely, he is going to stick around here. Okay. All I Want to Wrestling Radio. We will be right back.
Come on, feel the noise. Girls, rock your boys. you have a certain passion. Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio, or anything goes. Or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talku Talk Live. All you got to do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show! So tune in! Listen! I demand it.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night, live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
If you're looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forum. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official E-Fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Hey, you! Go! Wild Talk! Wild Talk! You want Wild Talk? This is George the Animal Steel. Hey! You go! Bye-bye.
Help! I need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone. Help! When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.
And welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio with the official theme song that was for Against All Odds this Sunday. That would be the legends of John Paul, George, and Ringo. Believe it or not, they were the best new artists back in 1960-something. 65, I believe. Wow! Crazy that you think those guys were one best new artist. Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio. I believe they debuted Sullivan, I believe it was November of 64. I'm not that old.
I would say four.
Yeah.
So they won Best New Artist before Ed Sullivan.
They won it after Ed.
Okay.
They won it after. They went on Ed and said, "Well, Beatles," and girls couldn't understand what was going on. Welcome back on World of Wrestling Radio, 267-297-1397. You can Skype Sir Rockin'.
If you like this show and you like some of our previous ones, like with George Animal Steel or the model Rick Martel, go to clickwrestle.com. We are, that is our official on-demand site. You can also type us in on iTunes if you have one of those neat gadgets. And you can check us out there. You can also check us out through the wildtalkradio.com archives. Spug and Mace are joining us as well. Kevin Scott is here. Unlike the rest of the Wrestle Talk Radio guys. Oh, that's right. If you can, this is pretty cool stuff. If you have a smartphone, and this still works possibly for the BlackBerry, Burberry, Moberry, Banana Banana, Faux Fairies, type in your browser wtr.wirenode.mobi, and you can listen to us live anywhere you want. Technology is awesome. And technology was so awesome this Sunday night that the majority of the Wild Talk Radio Network staff, minus me, that were involved with Wrestle Talk Radio this past Sunday, they watched the Grammy Awards, and that's what made me come up with the musical theme for this evening. So Spug, however, had more romantic intentions.
It wasn't romantic at all. I didn't want to watch the TNA pay-per-view. There was chocolate and strawberries in my house, and it sounded like a really good idea.
There you go. We'll leave it there.
There wasn't...
Wow, chicka, wow, wow.
No.
Exactly.
No, there was no romantic, I was going to go bang my wife intentions about it. Not one bit. There was, it sounded good. And to a fat guy, if you can mix fruit and chocolate, it's golden.
All right. We'll let me just backtrack for a second for fans that are aware of it. There was a go home version of TNA Impact that actually had wrestling on it. There was a lot of talking, and then it was, of course, setting up of storylines such as, you know, Jarrett loses, the kids go back to Kurt, and if Jarrett wins, Kurt's the groomsman, which you're the walker. We had the re-emerging of Hot Stuff Hernandez, or sorry, just Hernandez, who helped set up Anderson even having the match on Sunday night, taking on Jeff Hardy, which, believe me, we'll address that fun in a few minutes. We also had the debut of Rosita, who, if you're a fan of WSU, you know her as Davina Fly. She had a dark match a few weeks back, and they signed her up there. And, of course, Robbie E. got the shot to be the third person in the match that opened the show this Sunday, which was supposed to have been Generation Me taking on Robbie E., but if you're a fan of the Twitter.com/ my name is Logic. Ugh. I have followers. I actually have a follower of it from another radio show that was like, okay, this is awkward. You found out that the Bucks were trapped in Utah with Paul London, which sounds like a mini-series in its own right. So we had Friggin' a Future Kazarian come out and go, yo, my dude, you're going to wrestle tonight. You're wrestling me. So we had a non-title change there. Kazarian kept the strap, and if you we're going to be spoiler-free here and say that they do get involved with each other on this Thursday's Impact, and there's a return there as well. Think Playboy. We did see a six-man tag match of Scott Steiner and the TNA World Tag Team Champions Beer Money defeating Gunnar Murphy and Rob Terry with a super Frankensteiner. In the feud that seems nobody cares about, Samoa Joe defeated the Pope D'Angelo De Niro, who tapped out ridiculously fast enough that he could lay waste to Samoa Joe afterward. In a last knockout standing battle, we had the champion Madison Rayne defeating Mickey James thanks to assistance from Tara and an amazingly hidden set of brass knuckles. We had cold-blooded Matt Hardy, yes, that's really what he's calling himself, losing to Rob Van Dam. That's a good bong pass back to him. In a handicap match, we had Bully Ray defeating Devin, Brother Devon, and his children who were involved. And what better way to end that match where the kids are laid to waste and the pay-per-view goes really, really serious for several minutes, and believe me, we'll let everybody on the panel address that in a second. What better follow that than your match where kids are on the line again? And I almost wanted them to be on the pole during this match. Jeff Jarrett defeated Kurt Angle to the shock of nobody, hopefully, because, as you know, fans, there's more money in Kurt walking the aisle than there is.
Can we talk about that for a second?
No, let me just say one more thing first. And then, of course, we do have, once again, your TNA World Champion, soon to be a visitor to the, possibly a visitor to the North Carolina Correctional Facility. Jeff Hardy is your world champion, just taking Mr. Anderson. Now, Spug admitted he did not watch the pay-per-view, but has a great set of notes in front of him. So, kids versus the wedding, here, Spug. I mean, what, your
I could the stipulation. The stipulation is what bothers me, because after I've read, like I said, I read the notes about the pay-per-view and read the results, and then I went and Googled and YouTubed and found the end of that Jarrett match. Look at the – watch the look on Kurt Angle's face when he does an entirely symbolic gesture that individuals who research the business and have been in the business and study the business can understand. He left his boots in the middle of the ring.
Mm-hmm. Which took a little while for a lot of fans to even notice. It took Taz finally to just go look in the ring.
Yeah.
Because they didn't say anything about it.
This is what pisses me off. Is that individuals like Dixie Carter, Eric Bischoff, Vince Russo, Hulk Hogan, and I can't blame Dixie entirely because she's just dumb. She is. I can't blame her entirely for believing that Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, and Hulk Hogan know what's right for the business, because since they took over your company a year ago, you've gone further in the crapper than you were before. You've buried your talent that is supposed to carry you. You've buried Samoa Joe. You continually put your heavyweight title on a fucking drug addict. I'm sorry, but just once I had to let that slip because I can't stand him. You take a guy like Kurt Angle, who has an Olympic gold medal. Not one, but two. Let's forget the fact that he's a world-renowned professional wrestler. The dude has a freaking gold medal. You know how hard that is to get? How much dedication that takes? He is an outstanding professional wrestler. And you want to take a obviously painful incident in his past with somebody who is his boss. Jeff Jarrett still owns a stake in that company, and if I'm not mistaken, still signs his paycheck. So you want to take Kurt Angle's boss, who is now married to Kurt Angle's ex-wife, and say, we're going to use this as a storyline because it's a great idea. Y'all need to be taken out back and shot.
Well, to Kevin, I brought this up Sunday night on Wrestle Talk Radio, and you can go to the wildtalkradio.com site for the archive. We brought it up last week, too, that when you watch that segment at the Jarrett house with Jeff's three daughters from his previous marriage with his deceased wife, Jill, who is still missed in that office no matter what anybody says, the situation just looked really awkward. Those kids looked so, I brought it up. I said, why not just go to Central Casting in Nashville and go, right, you five, you look like them, get in there and go. Your thoughts on this whole thing? Pick up on what Spug said here. And this isn't something different. We've had this kind of thing before where real life family members have been involved. You know, the Sandman's child with Raven comes to mind. Jake Roberts is like Cheryl.
The thing with, I just want to say this. The thing with Sandman's kid was absolutely different, okay? Because the way that they did that angle, the way that Raven and Sandman and Sandman's, I believe she's now his former wife, did that angle, the way they put that together was absolutely absolutely beautiful. And it wasn't something that was over the top and tacky and disrespectful and just an absolute horrid angle like this is.
Yeah, I'm Kevin,
sorry,
give your thoughts on the match. You're fine, dude. You're totally fine. Opinions are welcome here.
Well, when The Rock came out, it was really good. I didn't even follow that. I feel the same way. As Alan mentioned before, I am a stand-up comedian, or I claim to be. I do write comedy. If you go to my Facebook, you'll see that I have a dirty sense of humor. I'm not prude. I can take a joke. I can take things a little bit further than most people. I had, from the beginning of this whole storyline, because I realized where it was going, completely disgusted by it. There's no... Okay, let's be honest. The idea of feeling this legit heat between the two of them does make it more interesting. I get that. If I'm Jeff Jarrett, would I want to step in the ring with Kurt Angle, a guy who could probably legitimately kill me? Probably not. At the very least, involving your actual children. I realize that in terms of Kurt, in terms of Jeff, Karen, who still really needs to just shut the hell up once in a while. For those three, if they want to do that, if they want to put their private lives on display, feel free. You know, that's your decision. Those kids, I'm sure, did not come to a rational decision saying, you know what, this is something that we want to do. As you said in that entire segment, it was awkward's not the right word. I felt disgusted watching. I felt bad for the children. This is divorce is kind of a big thing. You know, this really did happen to them. This is a real life stuff. Then you obviously have Jarrett's children where their mother passed away. I don't see how rational adults, and I do realize we're talking about people at TNA, I don't see how rational adults would even think that it was appropriate to involve children in this storyline on air. And of course, when you get to the points where Kurt's saying things about Karen or they're saying stuff about Kurt, how are you supposed to tell the kids, well, this is kind of how we really do feel, but we're just pretending right now? They're children. They don't understand that.
Exactly, and these kids are in school, and you got to be telling me. I mean, you look at the ratings. I mean, these kids are walking up to them, just like the to go to the Team 3D storyline, where those are really Devin Hughes' children. I've met them at a couple events, and you're just sitting there. Mace brought it up on Sunday. In our view, and it's rare that we agree, but this one we did, that to even watch the last two matches afterward was totally draining. I mean, they brought that pay-per-view to a halt, Mace, doing this.
Completely.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin can follow Mace in a second, but Mace, you pointed it out Sunday that any match that even came before it, you just went from your mind with the serious level, and it was just like, okay, you got these two teenage kids who, yeah, I'm sure they go to the Team 3D Academy and bump around, Mace, but that was just like, what the hell's going on here? How you know, we've talked in certain instances in WWE storyline back in the day of how far is too far. Did TNA go too far, Mace, with these two matches being the way they were? That you have two teenage kids getting laid out by brother Bully Ray, and then you've got kids being up in a custody battle next? I mean, what's next? Are we going to start having, you know, TNA guys bring guns to the ring and, you know, bring Homicide back and have guns ablazing? How far is too far, Mace?
Well, this is too far. This is, especially in the case of Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle, that was overstepping the bounds. But the Bully Ray Devon match with the finish that it had, it was like watching a semi going down the freeway, you know, the 200 miles an hour, then all of a sudden slamming on the brakes, and you watch the car wreck afterwards, and you just go, man, that's not right. You know, they should have seen this coming. But, you know, it's TNA. All of a sudden, it seems that they've all been sitting around with Van Damme backstage a bit too much.
I would like to interject a point real quick about the Bully Ray thing.
Go for it, dude.
The Bully Ray Devon thing with Devon's kids, I can kind of fluff aside because, one, Devon's kids are probably bumping around at the Team 3D Academy, one. And, two, Bubba Ray's probably over at Devon's house on the weekend barbecuing. You know what I mean? There's not legit heat there between Devon and Bubba, as far as I know. You know, and if there is, they can play it off really well.
Yeah, but, and they're also both teenage kids, unlike the Angle and Jarrett kids, who are under the age of 10 or 12, I believe.
Right, but with Devon's kids, one, they're probably bumping around the academy, so they know what to do. Two, they're teenagers, so that they can process the information better than someone who is under the age of 10. And three, when Uncle Bubba comes over on the weekends to barbecue, you know, it can all be explained away that we're just acting. This is part of our job. This is what we do. You know, I don't have as much of an issue with the Devon thing as I really do with the Jarrett Angle thing, and I'm sorry for interrupting you, Kevin.
You're fine. Well, let me bring this up to Kevin real quick, because for fans that aren't aware of it, and I'm probably going to shock the crap out of you, Kevin's black. Now, I'm going to bring this up. I'm sorry to out you. I'm sorry, dude.
I want to bring it up in this aspect.
He's black, and I'm sitting here talking about grape drink and fried chicken.
Yeah. We're from New York, dude. It's different than the people in other parts of the country.
We don't care.
Yeah. But this was something that on this pay-per-view also bothered me, and I addressed it on Wrestle Talk Radio, that if you watch TNA Impact, they have this really great promo on eliminate the hate, erase the hate. The quality of this, the quality of that, da 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 da. But then you bring Sean Hernandez and Matt Morgan out to the ring, and next thing you know, we're talking about race relations in Latin America and Spanish America, and I'm just sitting there going, hello, pot, meat, kettle, table for two. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
There's absolutely no need for that whatsoever. You have the history where Morgan tried to take him out by kicking his head against the ring post. You could have built from there. Obviously, he's brought in as the, you know, the muscle for the now dwindling mortal. There was no need to bring the whole race, you know, race car, whatever you want to call it, into play. I realize that they're trying to be as edgy as humanly possible, which I think plays into the whole thing with the Devon's kids and the Jarrett Angle. It's almost like they're trying so hard to recreate something that was successful about a decade ago in a different company, yet again.
Yeah, I mean, this pay-per-view is just ridiculous and craziness, especially as we outlined earlier. You put the championship belt back on a guy who may not make it to Victory Road, which is in mid-March. Something also weird came up about this show. I had an epiphany sitting there that I was just going like, wow, I've been on this show for a year now. I started with Online World of Wrestling Radio around this pay-per-view, and Spug brought it up earlier with the way that TNA writing has been using certain people like Rob Van Dam. I believe it may have been Mace or Omega that brought up that it almost, when you saw Matt Hardy this Sunday, that it felt like RVD all of a sudden was enhancement talent. I mean, to look at this product a year ago where, you know, you have certain folks that are still here. Mr. Anderson is in a main event spot the way he is. Rob Van Dam seems to be in a secondary spot. You know, Spug brought it up. Samoa Joe is pretty much floundering with the Pope D'Angelo De Niro. To Kevin, I said, because Mace and I and you, we watch the product regularly. Spug jumps in from time to time. But to you and then over to Mace, TNA, a year later, better than where they were at this point last year, worse or the same, and why?
It's not even close to being better. Definitely going to say, I'm going to go with worse, only because the raised expectations. This product right now is an absolute disgrace. There's nothing you can point to and go, okay, that's something that's interesting to me, or they're doing that well, or that was the right call. They pretty much turned their entire product into one storyline where they've kind of got to make sure certain people are under contract in order to pull it out completely. So they had to go back, you know, do a little bit of rewriting, a lot of kind of continuity problems, stuff also in terms of they didn't make sure that they probably elevated, say, Beer Money, Kazarian, or AJ Styles beforehand because they weren't looking to do that. So now you're stuck in a situation where after all this time, all this money spent, all the promises that were made, or sorry, promises made but never kept, you now looking at something where if they had just continued where they were, where in terms of, you know, you had an X division that was something, you had a tag team division that was building, you had the knockouts, you might not have had the quote-unquote names that were going to take you to that next level, but the next level they took you to were the one below. They should have just kept the course they were going. If they wanted to try to go live or, you know, go on Monday nights, still wouldn't work, obviously. But for all their time and effort spent, it's just a complete disaster.
Okay, to Spug, better, worse, or the same, and why?
Well, I can't get over the fact that Kevin's black.
I'm sorry I outed him, man. I feel bad now.
Just from the waist down.
You shouldn't have. Ooh. You shouldn't feel bad. It's more of here I am making stereotypical black jokes, and I don't know if I'm pissing him off or not.
Not at all.
He's gonna show up at my house with a gat and his homies.
Okay, Nasty, there you go.
Now it's on.
Now it's on.
Oh, baby, bring us.
They're worse. They're obviously worse. You have a booking or creative team or whatever you want to call that, that it obviously has their heads and egos so far up their own ass that they cannot see the light of day. I said it over a year ago, and I will continue to preach it from the mountaintops until somebody finally listens to me in that godforsaken company, that you are wasting your talent in Angle and Samoa Joe, and the things that you did better than WWE that made people want to watch TNA, the X Division, the actual women's wrestling, the tag teams, you know, the stuff that WWE thought wasn't important or didn't offer in the way that TNA did. Yeah, your heavyweight division was mediocre, but that's all you really need is a couple of big names and some other ones to throw in, and you're fine. The fact that they're not getting out of Orlando as often as they should. You know, yeah, I get it. You have a built-in crowd every 4 hours down there when you TV tape. But for Christ's sakes, if you go around a little 300 and 400 seat arenas, or even, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 seat arenas like the Wolstein Center in Cleveland, or, you know, some of the other ones around that ECW went to, you could go live on Thursday nights. You could be live for Thursday nights because right now you own Thursday nights. There is no other wrestling company that puts on a show on Thursday nights on television. WWE moved SmackDown from Thursday to Friday a long time ago. You corner the market on Thursday nights. If you went live, you would eliminate the spoilers. You would eliminate everybody knowing what you're going to do on TV and eliminate that people don't need to watch your TV anymore. That's half the problem with SmackDown, and WWE doesn't care because they make enough money that they don't need to do anything about it. TNA is a fledgling company that has the ability to rival that of WWE if done properly. And over the last year, I have seen a company that showed great promise get sucked in and implode upon itself with stupid storylines, stupid booking, stupid management. This is WCW 2.0, only extremely worse. I would rather watch a Monday Night Nitro in the dying days of WCW than sit through 2 hours of Impact.
Well, you'll be able to do that soon because you'll have the best of Nitro coming from the WWE folks. They will be doing a show, I believe it's either Fayetteville, North Carolina, or South Carolina, that will tape on the 24th and air on the 3rd of March, which is the wedding that nobody wants to see. As mentioned, Mace and I are loyal TNA subjects, some love, some hate involved in it. But to Mace, better, worse, the same, or the always traditional fourth option, meh?
We're going worse with an option of meh. As far as being a TNA loyalist, I handed in my resignation as of the pay-per-view. It was that low of quality. I can't really do any better than what Spug said. You know, he's basically put out the verbal equivalent of a great wall of text. So, yeah, the TNA, they're really fucking up.
I apologize.
Excuse the French.
You're fine. It's okay. Hey, I'm not the one that's, you know. For someone, like I said, and I know I'm going to get crap from people for saying this, but yeah, I've been covering TNA wrestling since day one. In Huntsville, Alabama, was there for all 4 hours of pay-per-view. Lots of fun there. Followed them in Nashville. Followed them here to Orlando. You know, bought these pay-per-views, bought the weekly stuff, and it's amazing to look at what is here. And it's weird because everything that Spug and Mace are hitting on, and Kevin did as well, there's still great stuff going on. Like, you know, Tim Stein said it on Wrestle Talk Radio, that when you critique a pay-per-view, we're not critiquing Kazarian and Robbie E. in that match. We're critiquing Russo, Chris Thomas, whoever's got the pencil, whoever's involved in that. But, I mean, is there a point? I mean, it's been joked around. I think Dutch Mantel had said it. Jim Cornette had said it. You know, what is Vince Russo got on Dixie Carter and Jeff Jarrett to keep this job? Oh, it pains me because I still do have friends that work for this company. I won't name names, but I do have friends that work for this company. And it's awkward to sit and talk with them sometimes because I want to talk about, dude, you know, the storyline's going great. But instead, I just go, okay, I'm not going there well. But I'm going to agree with the rest of everyone and say the TNA is worse off than they were at this point last year. Because you look at the talent roster that is gone. Homicide, gone. Awesome Kong, gone. Mickey Rocks, gone. Mick Foley was here, gone. RVD, in and out. So I mean, there's just so many pieces to the puzzle that have been in and out. To go back around the horn with this, we'll go to Kevin with this. They are doing this show in the Carolinas that'll tape on the 24th to air March 3rd. I know this isn't new for TNA. They did Bound for Glory, I believe it was 05-06 when Sting got the belt from Jarrett in Detroit. So they did that. They've done this going out of town. But do you think this is a good idea? This is a test balloon. If this succeeds, if the rating is there and the crowd shows up on the 24th, do you see this happening more, that they do maybe a taping in Orlando and then they go to somewhere else that they've had success? Would you like to see that as a fan of the product?
Okay, going back for one quick sec, Against All Odds is actually a decent show, not a pay-per-view, but a decent show for probably the first, let's go, two-thirds. And then, of course, the bad stuff happened. So when I see stuff like that, I do know, and I still feel that they can pull something off if everyone gets on the right track. As far as them traveling, it's TNA. They're going to mess it up. That's how I see it. They have the opportunity to do it. Obviously, Carolinas, Flair Country, Hardy Country. They're going to have people who are going to be very interested in going to the show as long as they properly promote it, which is something that they still have yet to get the grasp of. If that's a test balloon, and if it does work out sexually, great. I do want to see them get out of Orlando because the Impact Zone crowds have been beyond dead lately, to where you can actually hear people having conversations about, you know, Jersey Shore or whatever.
They were dead in 07 when I was there, dude, but that's beyond the point.
Absolutely ridiculous. But I always feel they have their own problems in terms of they internally feel that they're too small to do anything big. They talk a big game. They say, okay, we're going to go to Monday nights. We're going to compete. We're going to do this. But at the same time, on their very own show, you had Eric Bischoff talking about how Kevin Nash made the right decision in order to go to WWE to get more money. What are you doing? You're making yourself a second-class citizen on your own show. Your talent hears that, and your talent comes out and says the same thing where Robert Roode made similar comments this past week. It's just so frustrating. I don't understand what the disconnect is. I think maybe if they actually just, you know, had some confidence and someone who was steering the wheel properly, they might be able to do something.
Let me ask you this. Let me bring this up. If Russo gets fired, okay, for whatever reason, Dixie Carter finally sees the light of day and gets rid of Bischoff, Hogan, and Russo, and whomever else is at Ferrara, whoever else is attached to that regime creative team, and says, we're starting from scratch, we're booting them out the door, we're getting rid of them, and brings back people like Mantell or Cornette or whomever.
Heyman, you know, throw the name out there.
Heyman, who is the best person out there to take that company and put it back on track the way it should be? Who has the business smarts and savvy within the wrestling business to do it? Because we all know Paul Heyman can't handle a check.
Right.
As an
ECW fan, that'd be a person who I would love to turn to. But as we all know, business-wise, that's not the greatest decision ever. I think a part of the problem is that we keep looking at people within a certain, within a certain group, in terms of your aim, in terms of everybody else who coordinates, who, obviously they do have the mind for wrestling. They can be trusted to an extent, some more than others. Maybe the problem is that instead of looking for the best possible candidate, they're looking for the usual suspects. Go outside of the box. Maybe get somebody, and I'm not even going to go where it suggests in terms of, someone involved with soap opera writing or blah, 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 whatever.
Oh, we already got that on Monday and Friday,
exactly.
Dude.
Get somebody outside of the, I don't want to say a fan, but get somebody who knows the product, who is smart, who can handle the business end, and match it up with, say, somebody.
What about Tommy Dreamer?
I'm not sure.
He wrote a lot of stuff back in the day. I mean, when he was at ECW, he wrote a lot of he wrote a lot of stuff, and a lot of those angles were really good. Or, you know what? It'll perk up Mace's ears. What about Raven?
Well, he was busy complaining about everything that's gone on in this company for months as it is.
True.
Right, but
he has a brilliant mind.
He has an absolute brilliant mind, and personally, for me, in my opinion, if you have somebody who's sitting there complaining that loud, and you have you get rid of everybody that is the issue, hand them the book. Go here, you fix it. If you know what's better, you fix it.
So is this like, I double dare you to fix it, dude?
No, but I mean Raven is a genius.
I mean, well, let me bring up another name before Mace goes. There were stories a few weeks ago, possibly a few months ago, of former WCW creative member Kevin Sullivan. Lives in South Florida, I believe in the Florida Keys. Rumored to have met with Dixie and outlined a whole thing, and he said, oh, I could come up with a year's worth of stuff. So, to Mace, Raven, Tommy Dreamer running TNA, is this too far-fetched as opposed to who's already been doing it for the last 8 years?
I wouldn't call that far-fetched. you know, Tommy Dreamer's probably one of the better in-ring workers from to come out of ECW, and Raven's probably one of the best minds in the business. So all you do is sit down and listen to any shoot promo with the guy or his Secret of the Ring series. You know, the dude has a perfect mind for wrestling and booking storylines and everything else. Sure, he's ADD is all hell. All you got to do is take a look at his vlogs for those. But that type of combo, yeah, they could probably help TNA. They wouldn't save TNA, but they could sure help TNA.
All right, well, what saves TNA? Okay, we wake up tomorrow and we sign on to our computers and we peruse through the dirt sheets on the internet and we see that everybody that we bitch about on a weekly basis is gone.
Didn't we do this at WCW at one point?
What saves this company?
Ooh.
Rock return.
Come on, Kev. Go on.
So what? There's nothing saving this company. It's so far gone in terms of just this presence right now, which, granted, that's probably not the right word because they don't have a presence. If you ask the average wrestling fan about TNA, they probably think it's some kind of late-night Skinamax thing. There's nothing to it.
Yeah.
There's that story Ric Flair told at one point where he was in an airport getting ready to go to an Impact taping, and a fan came up to him and said, oh, what have you been doing these last few years? And he's turned around and he's gone, I've been on TNA. And the fan's gone, what?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and let me bring this up real quick, because I had a talk with Phil Strom last night about this, and he wanted to be here tonight, but due to his real job at the Poughkeepsie Journal, he couldn't. He is also involved in the Under the Ring blog, which you can find through the Poughkeepsie Journal website. He brought up the fact that one of the WWE marketing PR folks, as Dwayne Johnson was in the ring doing his promo, had sent out already a press kit with photos and stuff and links to a post-Raw chat that was going on. TNA tried that, I believe, right after the 1-4 event last year, where they were doing a post-show press conference-type thing. I mean, this is the same company, and Kevin can attest to it being in New York. When they ran their event in Coney Island, they had Hulk Hogan on their poster, and the Immortal Bald Spot was not going to be anywhere within 1,000 miles of the thing. You know, WWE, even when their house shows were down, except growing up in New York, I had Regis and Kathy Lee, then eventually Regis and Kelly. You know, when we talked to Lanny Poffo, he had said he had been on that show. You go to ESPN2's Cold Pizza or whatever it's called now, you see the WWE stars showing up there. Cena's been there to promote movies, The Rock, that kind of thing. There's not really a TNA media presence, as Kevin was probably going to say, unless you're in that particular town that their house show's in, and Jared and Borash go to the radio station and do the AM drive time or the PM drive time thing. So, I mean, does it also involve, Kevin, their creative people like Ross Foreman and Stephen Godfrey, who I've had dealings with and Phil's had dealings with? And is there just a complete, total overhaul of this organization, even all the way to the top of Dixie Carter, who, for fans don't know it, before she was part of TNA Wrestling, she had her own PR company called Trifecta Entertainment. She worked in country music.
Something marketing. That's amazing.
Yeah, she runs Trifecta Entertainment, which is a PR firm.
As you said, in my area, there's been, I want to say, 5 total TNA house shows in the past maybe 3.5 years or so. I've seen that one poster for Coney Island. That's it. Not a radio spot, nothing in print, nothing ever. Just that one poster that I saw, I think, online.
And the billboard in Times Square, where you'd be for
oh,
Impact.
Oh, boy, yes. That's
yep.
A great spot.
He's a New Yorker. He said sore. He put an R on the end of the saw. He's a New Yorker.
Yeah, we've been outed big time.
New Yorker.
From New York? Jeez.
Yeah, you're dead, dude. You're totally dead to the audience. They're going to be like, wait a minute, we can't listen to this show ever again.
I can't remember. Is he a dirty Yankee fan?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, yep, pitchers and catchers report this week. We're very happy to hear it.
They did. Today.
Yeah, that's easy, though.
Oh, yeah, he's too busy sitting there going,
I can opt out of my contract and make more money from the same team. Yay!
You're welcome for CG, by the way.
Yeah, thanks a lot. To Mace, you know, from being, as you said, the WWE and TNA do some form of international touring, and they had one where they went recently over to the United Kingdom, France, and other stuff, and we had the fun with Ric Flair. Are they in an international sense, are they known even like in Australia or in other countries you may have friends with on an international level, or are they still looked as that company that shows up every so often like WWE? I mean, WWE is international to a degree that you can watch their pay-per-views everywhere, but I mean, on your cable system in Australia, is TNA available?
Yeah, we get TNA Impact, mind you. It's like almost at midnight on a Saturday, but still, you know, there's better things to be doing on Saturday nights around about midnight, like listening to CB Radio right here on worldtalkradio.com.
Nice.
There's your plug, Rock. Shut up. Yeah. Because if I didn't do it, he was going to do it. But I've been hearing reports like TNA is still pretty big in the UK, which is quite surprising. Over here in Australia, they copped a lot of flack because of their tour that they were going to do, 2 years ago, just before the Immortal Bald Spot came on television. They were going to come down here, do a tour, and make some money, but the Immortal Bald Spot appears in TNA, and all of a sudden the tours are called off. You know?
And the footage from that tour is never seen anywhere.
Oh, no, that's the Hulkamania tour. That was on before that. But yes, that footage never aired anywhere.
Scandalous. But as Kevin and I just said, and Spud kind of chimed in, is it from the ground up? Like I said, Dixie Carter comes from a PR background, and you send some of these folks that they have done international stuff. Jay Lethal did one. Sanjay Dutt, when he was in the company, did something like that, where they went internationally. I mean, I know it's just mind blowing. So like I said, to think, and I now know I'm never going to get a TNA guest on this show, and I'm fine with it. But it blows my mind when I first met Dixie Carter in 2002, and then subsequently at other events, to be told yes, she worked for her company as Trifecta Entertainment that Andy Barton worked with, and her background is public relations. I mean, that's like the biggest oxymoron you got there.
Yeah, definitely. And to be honest, TNA suffers from the ECW syndrome. Anyone who remembers ECW on TNN, the only time you would see an ECW commercial was during ECW. TNA is having the same type of problem. They need to get more promotion out there. They are, but they aren't.
Because I don't know if Kevin watches or Spug watches, but sometimes during like the CSIs or other shows, you'll see them run a TNA bumper, or you'll see in the lower corner they'll have TNA Impact tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. I mean, it's out there, but it's not to the effect that, you know, WWE has with NBC Universal, that you'll see a spot on USA Network, and then you may see a spot on you see the spots on Sci-Fi for SmackDown. So, I mean, it just seems to be that maybe we need to go from the look at the top of the totem and go, Dixies, you know, fix this. I mean, we want this company to survive. I don't want this company to go away. I like watching some of the stuff that I don't see on WWE programming. Or if you get HDNet and you can watch ROH until their thing ends, or I can't go to a local indie promotion and see. It just pains me that we're sitting here and spending all this time talking about saving this promotion when you've got, as Spug said, you've got Desmond Wolf, Nigel McGuinness, which I still got wanted posters out. The guy's out there somewhere. If you see him, find him. His family and friends miss him. Samoa Joe had one of the greatest undefeated streaks in ROH history and is being stuck in a mid-card thing with Elijah Burke, the Pope D'Angelo De Niro, who almost around this point last year was a world title contender. He wrestled at Lockdown last year for the world title. You know, you've got great tag teams like Beer Money and Gen Me and the Motor City Machine Guns, and they're not faking them breaking up. I mean, it's not rocket surgery. Gabe Sapolsky and Rob Feinstein did it for years in Ring of Honor. Two guys in the ring, ring the bell, go.
This is what truly bothers me about TNA, other than the fact that they're horrible at business, is that, and you can disagree with me or agree with me on it, because there are some that do and some that don't. TNA was a spot that Jarrett could go to where he could get over because he couldn't get over anywhere else.
Oh, I'm sure of that.
He had to have somewhere, and granted, he's made the fatal mistake of every promoter, indie or whatnot, across the country who has done this. He put the belt on himself.
Right. But he didn't do it right away.
No.
He didn't do it right away in those two. He actually put it on Ron Killings, which people sometimes forget.
No, I'm not saying he did it right away. But
okay.
Jeff Jarrett, by all accounts, is an egotistical, arrogant prick who is the biggest mark for himself. I may be right, I may be wrong. I don't know the man.
Yeah.
But
let me bring this. Go ahead. And then I want to bring something up. Go ahead.
But
please.
This company could be a lot further ahead if individuals like Jeff Jarrett would just get the fuck out of the way.
But, well, here's a name that I should have brought up earlier, and it's one that I was hoping would possibly be involved in the storyline that's been going on, that most people, unfortunately, you know, you want to talk strained relations, Jerry Jarrett would have been a perfect person to be involved in this storyline with Jeff Jarrett, because those are his grandkids. Three of his grandkids, if you've seen Taylor Swift's music video, which I can't remember which one they're in, those are his grandkids. And unfortunately, there's a strained relation there going back even to 2002, even Pat before 2002, if you've seen Jeff Jarrett's King of the Mountain DVD, or if you've met him or know stuff about the family, you know, there's a strained relation there. But I mean, to go back, I said mention Kevin Sullivan, but that's something that I think I would have liked to have seen, is Jerry got to come back at some point and go, I told you Russo's going to bite you in the ass. If you read, it's an interesting publication that many people may not even know exists, but go to Amazon.com or a book site and put in Jerry Jarrett's name. He did a diary from the entire year of 2002 that was not even meant to be the first year of TNA wrestling. He talks about it in that book, Kevin, where he said that, I don't understand where my son is going with this, with Vince Russo, and this could come to get him in the end. And it looks like 8 years later, it's come to get him in the end. I mean, I know he's an easy target, guys. Russo's the easiest target because of all the fire Russo chants, Kevin. But he's still the one that's putting pen to paper, or you know, or typing it out there. And Jeff's just as guilty. I mean, at some point, shouldn't Russo be sitting there going, crap, I've exhausted. I mean, he went home a couple times in his 8-year reign.
Right.
I mean, isn't there a point where he should be looking, going, okay, Ferrara split again? Maybe I need to split completely and recharge in Colorado or Nashville, wherever the heck he's living.
I'm still waiting for Ash and Kutch to come out and make say punked. There's no reason why the people who are still in charge are still in charge. Outside of, say, Dixie, because obviously, you know, going up top, Russo shouldn't be there. We all know that. Whether he gets more blame than he deserves, questionable, but he definitely does deserve blame. We will all agree to that one. Jeff has, unfortunately, as we were going before, he turned himself to Triple H at one point in time for a very lengthy a period of TNA, and it killed him. It killed the bill for AJ Styles. It killed Mighty Brown completely. If I know that's a forgotten name, which is kind of sad.
Oh, yeah. He's another good one.
I forgot about Monty Brown.
Alpha Male.
He should have been a huge name, and it's just nothing ever happened with him. I think he had a title shot that I don't even remember if he even got it.
He had one on a pay-per-view, I think.
Because he turned heel for him, correct?
Yeah, he had one for a while there. I mean, there's an always an interesting story. And then I'll let the other two gentlemen talk here. You know, talk about just amazing stuff that TNA had had in their grasp and could have run with it. Picture this heel faction. Ron the Truth Killings, Monty Brown, and Primetime Neelix Skipper. Both Neelix Skipper and Ron Killings told me that story when I interviewed them, and they actually were told by TNA, nah, there's no money in that. And I'm going, what? Okay. It's Nation of Domination with way different people, and it didn't get passed over here. So, I mean, before we wrap the entire show, go ahead, Spug.
To go back to the Vince Russo thing real quick, does he get a moderate amount of blame that he doesn't deserve? Absolutely. I will not disagree with that 100%. But I also think that Vince Russo would probably be a billion times better in TNA if he had a filter like Kevin Sullivan, yeah, or Paul Heyman or a Vince McMahon like person to run through. You know,
was kind of there when Jim Cornette was there, though, but as you saw at one point when we talked to Dutch Mantel, they weren't even talking to each other and they're in the same damn room.
Okay, here's the thing, though. I think the relationship between Vince Russo and Jim Cornette was ruined from the beginning because of the way things were handled in WCW, and Vince was given such free rein and did the things he did with Dr. Death, the making fun of Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and JR. You know, when they did those things, I think this really rubbed Jim the wrong way, and it got personal. If Vince Russo just has to sit in the back, just has to write storylines, and has a filter that gets rid of the garbage ideas and keeps the good ones and can mold and form them the way that they need to be formed, I think Vince Russo is 10 times better. The other thing, though, is that when you have individuals like Jarrett and others in that company, Bischoff, Hogan come to mind, who only care about getting themselves over and furthering their own, you know, ego, legend, status, whatever, that's a big detriment to your company. That's a big detriment to anything that you're trying to do. And when I had entirely forgot about Monty Brown. I had forgotten Monty Brown ever stepped foot in a TNA ring. And now I remember how good he was in TNA.
Yep. Yeah. To Mace, I know we've had this conversation on the air. We've had it off the air. Like we said, he's an easy target to hit. But, you know, we've mentioned all these names. But, I mean, it 8 years with this company on and off, there's got to be a point where even Russo's got to be sitting there going, I'm all out of ideas, dude. I've blown the load. I can't find anything else on Springer or Maury Povich or any other talk show or Judge Judy to use here. Is it? I mean, we see Joey Styles joke around on his Twitter about using the word wrestling, and this is a company that at one point, you know, Russo came out and said that, oh, there's people counting the minutes of fake wrestling on a fake wrestling show. Isn't there a point where somewhere that Jeff Jarrett wakes up and goes, God, 8 years has gone by and we're still stuck in square one on the board? You know, I want to get past square two, Mace. How do I do it? It's got to be Russo or someone else getting out of the way.
There's probably no point where either Jeff Jarrett or Vince Russo wake up and go, you know what, we've stuffed up, I'm going to hand it over to somebody else. Because I've got a feeling at this point in time, they're pretty much going, we've still got money coming in from Universal, we still have, like, the deal with Universal, the deal with Spike, there's some advertisers, we get the occasional house show going. We're still making a little bit of headway, so screw it, as long as we're making money, we might as well have fun.
At this point...
That's my opinion.
No, you had a great point. We appreciate it. Thanks to Kevin for stopping by. He's a real trooper for being here. As I said, he has the Twitter. It's twitter.com/Kevin_K_Scott. You'll find him on Facebook. And you never know, you can find him at a comedy club near you on Long Island. Spug is twitter.com/tapout2KO. He's involved with OTL, which is Otaku Talk Live on his network, which we'll let Maze talk about in a minute. And we thank Spug for being here. He needs to exit stage right to check on his kids, and we love that about him. He's also involved in Tap Out to Knockouts, which is a live event during Strike Force events and UFC events. Mace, yours is, I believe, the Mace thing. Did I get that right?
You are correct, sir.
Awesome! And not only is he a part of Otaku Talk Live, not only are him and Spug a part of Russell Talk Radio, which we'll talk about in a moment, he also has a podcast called Bashing the Books. But you also have a show you want to mention that looks like it's going on in your homeland. So go ahead and give the fans some information.
Yes, yet again, I am pimping this show, and it will be for the final time, at least until they give me the date of the next one. Melbourne City Wrestling presents Vendetta live on Saturday, the 19th of February, from the Thornbury Theatre, 859 High Street, in Thornbury, Victoria, obviously Australia. So far on the card, the Melbourne City Wrestling Championship is on the line in a ladder match between Danny Psycho and Tommy Hellfire. We have a number one contendership match with Rocky Monero versus Mike Peterson and Slex. We have an interstate challenge representing my home state of Victoria, the mad chair swinging bastard Crackerjack, up against Esteban Molina from Queensland. Don't know anything about this guy. I hope he swam down. We also have the second match out of three between Shazza McKenzie and Kelly Skater, who you might know as the Rate Tank from Shimmer. They will be competing in a submission match. Also on the card, Ryan Rawlings versus Champagne Pyro in a grudge match. You can find more information about this show at facebook.com/Melb City Wrestling, or you can just go melbournecitywrestling.com.au. The tickets on the night are $20 for adults, $15 for children, and family for $55. They have all the contact information on the Facebook and the website. So go and check out some local wrestling, see how the Aussies do it.
Don't forget, tickets for ASW Best of the Best on Saturday, March 5th, are available through aswflorida.com. Also, if you attend the live Friday events at Strokers Billiards in Tampa, Florida, one half of the world's largest all-nighter shooter, Storm, has tickets for that. Get ready, because on the 25th, former WWE diva and possibly someone who should be in the Hall of Fame this year, Tammy Sunny Sitch, will be in the house on the 25th. We already have two guests lined up. I'm going to tell you definitely next week. We mentioned it earlier on the show. If you were listening a little earlier when we had Graham Coffin on, definitely check out the history of WWE.com. Former WWE creative member and lead current associate with Ring of Honor, David Lagana, who has an interesting website called IWantWrestling.com, will join us. And this I can announce. Pencil this in for March 8th. There's a tentative on March 1st, but I'm not going to announce who it is. March 8th, a man who, with his tag team partner, should go into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. Spug popped when he heard this because he's like, I'm so talking Ohio State football with him. Johnny
can you
go ahead.
Well, Could you say our upcoming guest could create a rush to the website?
Absolutely. He is known to some folks as Joe Laurinaitis. That is right. Road Warrior Animal will be with us March 8th. He has a book coming out that will be in stores soon. So that is pretty cool. Thanks to Graham Cawthorn. Brad Dygan, Jason Dedrich, the people that let me do this each and every week, Tim Stein and Sir Rock of the Wild Talk Radio Network, Kevin Scott, Spug, Mace, thanks, and also to Carly Simon for providing a song that, to this day, people still don't know who it's about. Years of Vain. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week with David Lagana. We're out of here.